Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome to episode 152. I'm Sean Penrod. So happy you are here. Last weekend, while most of us here in the States were probably still in a food coma, over in Chiba, we had a Grand Prix. And congratulations to Kentaro Yamamoto, who won that Grand Prix. So that's really cool to see players that we recognize from other events continue to do well. So congratulations again to Mr. Yamamoto for taking down Grand Prix Chiba. This weekend, we have Grand Prix Denver and Grand Prix Madrid. So that's going to be really fun to see players all over the world gather together at these Grand Prix to test their mettle one against another. Can't wait for that. Should be super exciting. Today we have a fun guest lined up for you. I can't wait to share his story. But before we do, I do want to say thank you so much to the patrons. This show is brought to you by mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can support the show directly if you so choose. The patrons of the show really mean a lot to me. Thank you so much. You help keep the show going. And as a thank you, every month I do a Magic-related drawing. And we're here at the end of November, which means that in the first few weeks of December, I'll be doing the drawing and giving out some more prizes. So if you're interested in throwing your hat in that ring, mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to check that out. So that's really it. Just a brief top of the show portion today. So let's bring in our guest, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a 19-year-old computer science major at UMass Amherst. Grand Prix Providence was his first Grand Prix Top 8. Previously, he had Top 64 two Grand Prix and Top 8ed the last RPTQ. This is his first time breaking through to the Pro Tour. Coming to us from Amherst, Massachusetts, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Zachary Keeney. Zachary, how are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Of course I am.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Zach, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at ZKeeney, that's K-I-I-H-N-E. You can reach out to him there, ask him a question, say thanks for being on the show. That's probably the quickest and easiest way to get a hold of him. So at ZKeeney on Twitter. So reach out to him there. So, Zach, we'd love to get to know you outside of Magic a little bit first. So it sounds like you are a student doing that. What year in school are you?
So I'm a sophomore right now.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I'm a computer science major at UMass Amherst, and right now I'm taking, I think, 21 credits.
Ooh, heavy load.
So I have it's a lot of work.
Man, so, and you still managed to top 8 a Grand Prix, so we'll dive into that for sure. So are you born and raised in Massachusetts, or are you just going there for school?
Yep, I'm from Concord, Mass, so it's like an hour and a half from Amherst. It's more towards Boston. It's like 40 minutes outside of Boston, so it's like the greater Boston area.
Excellent. And let's see, other than being a very busy student and playing Magic, like you don't, do you work or do you have any other thing going on that takes up your time? I mean, those two right there probably take up the majority.
Not right now. Like, normally I would have other stuff going on, but like, those two basically take up all my time. I don't really even have time to like be good at Magic.
Oh, well, I mean, we would argue that's not the case since you're on the podcast. Let's see. So, yeah, cool. So we got where you're from and a little bit about what you have going on. And we love to hear your origin story. We love going back in time, being right there over your shoulder. We want to hear the first time that you ever saw or played with Magic cards. So tell us that story. Take us there.
So in fifth grade, I think during over the summer, so like the end, my friend, I went over to his house and he'd come back from camp with Magic cards, which I didn't know what they really were at the time. At first, I actually refused to play because I thought it was too nerdy. After like 10 minutes, I was like, okay, you can teach me. And then of course, 10 minutes later, I was hooked. So
nice. So end of the summer, fifth grade, got you hooked with Cardboard Crack. Love it. What was that first set?
So my first set, I think, was technically Eventide. My first deck was a Kithkin intro pack.
Oh, okay.
But then, like, yeah. And then I think the next cards I got were from Shards of Alara. So that's when it, like, really started, kind of. I would call, like, Shards the first, like, real set I experienced.
Yeah. Excellent. And what's been your favorite set since then?
My favorite set is Khans of Tarkir.
Nice. Why is that?
Because it's it's like a great limited environment, very fun. And then it's also the first time I like really started to get into like competitive play, and the standard format's really cool and all sorts of like powerful, fun, like great things to do in it. Although I didn't get to like experience it as much as I like would want to now, because that was like, I think when I was still in like high school and lots of other things going on.
Yep. I totally know what that's like, because I came back to Magic. My first draft ever was New Phyrexia, right? Like right at the end. And so Innistrad was just coming in. So this was just when I was getting back into Magic. So the most I played was I would play Commander at my friend's house, borrowing his decks, you know, because I was just kind of coming back into it. But that's kind of when I view myself as coming back to Magic, you know, hardcore. Looking back on it, like, oh man, just like you, it was like, I loved Innistrad. I loved the flavor, and I got some packs and stuff like that. Werewolves, it was all so cool. It resonated with me, but I didn't really dive into it. And it's one of the best sets ever, and everyone loves it. And I would have loved to be a lot more involved in like the limited scene back then. So I know what it's like to look back and be like, oh, I love this set, and I wish I could have played it a little bit more. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it's definitely something. Maybe we'll go back though.
Yeah, I mean, to cons,
return to Tarkir, whatever.
Hey, you know it. It's within the realm of possibility. They definitely said that they're going to be returning to places, and yeah, why not there, right? So I loved it because they figured out the morph thing. Like, I loved how, you know, they had the whole, you know, until you got to five mana, you, not that it was safe, but you know, once you got to five mana, you knew then the flips were like, okay, now I got to be careful, and so you never had to play like a guessing game and figure, okay, at the very least we can trade. And so I loved the morph. I thought that was really cool, and cons was a lot of fun. I thought the story was pretty good, going back in time and changing things, and so yeah, I think that they started catching their steam, Wizards did, as far as storytelling and whatnot, and I thought it was really good. So cool. Along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Right now, it's probably Avacyn, Archangel Avacyn.
Nice.
Mainly because I've just been doing like a lot of winning with it. So it's like hard to put down like a card that you just keep like doing well with.
Yes. But now, for those of us who may not know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Okay. Avacyn is 5 mana, white 3 for 4/4 flying, vigilance, flash, angel. And when it enters the battlefield, it makes all your guys indestructible. For some reason, it's all of them and not the others, like it probably should be. And then whenever a non-angel dies, at the beginning of the next upkeep, it's kind of worded weirdly so that they can like have the timing work, it transforms. And when it transforms, it becomes a 6/5 flying, loses the vigilance, but deals 3 damage to all creatures and your opponent.
So cool. So why do you like it?
I like it because for the last 3 standard seasons, I'd always get to 5 mana, whether it be with green-white tokens, Band Company, or blue-white flash, and I just pass. And I know like I'm so favored because I can just like slam my Avacyn. But I think outside of standard, I'd probably, the next card would be Pyromancer's Ascension. That's a card I've been like, I've been playing that card for like a while, probably since it was in standard. That card. So Pyromancer's Ascension is a little more complicated. It's 1 red for an enchantment. Whenever you cast a spell or cast an instant or sorcery that's the same as one of the ones in your graveyard, gets a counter. And when it has 2 counters, you get to double your instants and sorceries. So it's like kind of weird, but my favorite use of it is in Storm or now Modern Storm, and now I'm playing it in Thing in the Ice, Jeskai Ascension. So it's just like a really fun card, and then you can just like steal games on like turn 3 with it.
That's awesome. That does sound pretty cool. So that's from the Ascension cycle that they had a while back?
Yeah, from all the way from original Zendikar.
Yeah, so. Okay. Yeah, I have the white Ascension in my Avacyn Angel of Hope EDH deck, so.
Yeah.
Right on, man. That's so cool. And I love that your standard favorite card is Archangel Avacyn, because she is one of my favorite characters. Even though I know that she's not around anymore, she has been unmade, anguishly unmade. But she's still awesome. I love her. All praise out of Epson or whatever they say. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, so right on, man. So we love learning about you and hearing a little bit about your favorites and whatnot. So thanks for sharing that. And I want to know why. Why do you play Magic? Like, here you are several years later. You're going to Grand Prix. You know, you have a busy work school schedule and you're still making the time to play. What makes Magic fun for you? Why have you stayed around all these years?
So what makes Magic fun? So I like the challenge and like staying focused. And then the reward of like winning is something that like I don't really get anywhere else. I don't like play a sport or anything. So the action is something I really like. Although it makes losing all the much worse, but that's something we can maybe talk about later. But yeah, I just like the competition and the thought behind it. And of course, just like playing Magic's fun, like somewhat inherently. Like the game is enjoyable. And if it's not enjoyable, probably should take a break.
Yeah, that is so funny because just last episode, we received the same advice. Have fun, and if you're not having fun, take a break. So I think there's some truth there of two guests in a row said the same thing. So that's awesome. So tell us, Zach, tell us an aspect of Magic that you struggled with early on. Something that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame. Because we love seeing, hey, he's on the Pro Tour, but he struggled with this back in the day. I can overcome it too.
So and still do struggle to some extent with are sideboarding in Constructed and also mulliganing, more so in Constructed. First with sideboarding, I usually can figure out like what cards to bring in, but I'm never quite sure what cards to bring out. And the first time I really like got a handle on this was I played Esper Dragons like 3 weeks after the Pro Tour and a Worcester, I think it was Worcester, SEG event, SEG Open. And so I printed out Paulo Vito or Dama de Rosa's like sideboard guide, and I brought that with me. So, and using this sideboard guide, I was able to figure out like which cards to bring in, which cards to take out in certain matchups. And that helped me enormously, like, because I'd never played this type of deck and never actually like played Esper Dragons, even not much in testing at that point. So like, don't be afraid to just take the sideboard guide from an article or something similar to that, especially if you've never played the decks before. And then what was the other one? Mulligans. So mulligans, the issue I have is that like, I'll tend to keep like sketchy hands. Like, I always feel this was even more so before the scry rule. I would keep, like, I wouldn't want to mulligan to six cards, so I keep, like, two lands, like, three drop, four drop, five drop, like, two other, like, four or five drops. And it would just, like, never pan out as well as I wanted it to. And that's something with blue-white, with specifically blue-white flash, the deck I played at Providence. You need to, unless the two land hand is like godlike, unless it has like Thraven Inspector and Smuggler's Copter, mulligan it. Just like, if it doesn't have Thraven Inspector, it's probably an auto mulligan. Unless you have like Smuggler's Copter, like Selfless Spirit, and like another two drop or something like that. Like, you really, the issue is that you not only need to hit three lands, because it might look like you have like, oh, I have Reflector Mage and a Spell Queller, like I'll be fine. But the thing is, you'll hit three lands, and then you'll, like, cast your spells, but they don't get better as the game goes on. So if you're stuck on three lands for a turn or two, you just can't win. In fact, I'm much more likely to keep five lands, like, any two spells. That's something the past couple standard formats with Green White Tokens, Band Company, and now Blue White Flash, keeping five lands, two spells has like really worked out. Like, I think that's because the standard formats have kind of changed where hitting your land drops is very important and like getting to five and Avacyn on time is very powerful. So that's something, mulligans are definitely something that's very hard. And it's always hard to know if you did it right or not, because let's say you keep a sketchy one and then you draw two lands off the top and it's all fine. But you should have mulliganed, like, and let's say 9 out of 10 people agree you should have mulliganed. It was still the wrong choice, even though it worked out for you. So very hard for players to like comprehend, and very hard for just like humans in general to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, it goes to the whole...
Because you want to say, oh, I got rewarded. Like,
yes, yes. You have to evaluate the decision, not the results. You know, so just because it turned out good for you doesn't mean that it was the right choice. Similarly, if you, you know, make the right choice and you still lose, that doesn't mean it was the wrong choice. You know, you can't judge.
Yeah,
it's very easy to look at the results because, you know, win or loss or it went well. It's very easy to judge those. But you really need to evaluate the decision itself, whether that was good or bad.
Yeah. So if you mull, let's say, a pretty medium to bad, like 7-card hand, get 6 non-land cards, mulligan that. Now you're on 5 cards. You're like, oh, I should have kept the first hand. But that's not correct. You probably should have mulliganed it. So that's something that's important to remember.
So true. And I love what I picked up from what you're saying is, you know, it also comes down to really understanding like your deck and how it runs and whatnot, because you had this progression. You grew as you played this style of deck more and more and more. You started realizing, hey, you know, like, you know, 5-land is not the end of the world. Just like 2-land, it, you know, it better be really good or it's a snap mulligan, you know? And so I love hearing that progression that as you played this style of deck, you know, you kind of changed the iteration a little bit, but it was similar style. You learned and you kept that knowledge and you passed it on and you kept improving your ability to evaluate what's good and what's not good. And I think it's great that you were cognizant of that the whole way through and have been able to, you know, improve yourself as a player because of it. So that's the lesson I got away from that. And Prodigies, I hope you did as well, that you can, you know, learn as you go and don't forget the lessons that you learned in previous decks and formats because they apply in the future as well. So as you have improved, Zach, as a Magic player, was there a moment or a period of time that you saw the Matrix, that you kind of leveled up and grew as a Magic player?
So I would say probably the summer before my freshman year of college. So not this past summer, but the summer before it. So I would say at the start of the summer, I top eighted, I think it was a limited PPTQ. This was still Dragons of Tarkir limited. And in the semifinals, in game 2, I'm playing a Grixis like pile of removal spells, essentially. And I originally, to make sure I ground out my opponent, I had Hedonist Treasure Trove, which is a 7-mana enchantment that they exile their graveyard. And then you can cast spells. You have to pay the like normal colored mana. This is before they kind of changed it. You'll see cards like Gonti now that like you can cast with any color of mana. This you had to pay like the actual mana. You can cast those cards. So what first happens is game 1, I cast it. I exile their graveyard. And then like 2 turns later, I like play a morph from it. Because luckily there was morphs, so every deck had something I could play. Even though their deck was like green and blue or something like that. So I couldn't cast any of their spells, really. Of course, and then later, the morph dies, goes to their graveyard. We realize I picked up the wrong card, and it's not actually a morph. So originally, this was a game loss. But because this was the point at which morphs were still game losses, I think. So this changed later, but that would be a game loss normally. If I just played a card that was not a morph from my hand, obviously that'd be a game loss. Or if I like didn't reveal morph when I picked it up, that would be a game loss. But because this was from a public zone, i.e. the pile under the Hedonist Treasure Trove, it was fine. And we both got warnings, but no game loss.
Interesting.
And, they switched the card. Yeah, because it was public information.
Yes, yes, yes. Makes sense.
So that was fine. And then the game 2... I switch out Hedonist Treasure Trove for Learn from the Past, which is blue 3. I think it's an instant. A target player shuffles their graveyard into their library and draw a card. My thinking was like, oh, it's going to be like Elixir of Immortality in like the blue-white Sphinx's Revelation deck, which is probably like very flawed, but that was what I was thinking at the time. So I cast it, and I shuffle my graveyard into my library, and I draw my card. 2 turns later, someone's like, oh, where's the Learn from the Past? Turns out I had put it in my graveyard and then shuffled my graveyard in. So this ended up being my third warning from like 2 in the Swiss. And I got a game loss in a game I was like very ahead in. And then I go on to lose the next game. And then this is followed by a summer in which at every PT, it what seemed like every PPTQ, I would 3-0, and then I'd have essentially three winning ins to make the top eight, right? So if you go 3-0 and then in a six round PPTQ and then end up 4-2, you're probably going to get eighth. But then I would go 0-3, and I would like never do well. And then right when I started college, the first event, I did the exact same thing, and I didn't threaten to quit, but I thought I was going to take a break for a week. I was like, okay, like I've been playing a lot of Magic, like every week. And then my friends are all like, oh, Friday comes around. They're like, we're going to this this event on Saturday. Like, do you want to come? I mean, yes, because Magic.
Yeah, Magic is life. Got it.
Close enough.
Yeah.
And then I top eight that. And that kind of like righted the boat, like lifted the curse, however you want to put it. And then I've been able to get better from there. But it's important to realize that when you're in like a cold streak, it will end if you get better, but like it just, you have to kind of work to get out of that trench.
I like that. Yeah. You know, cold streaks will end. You just need to learn from them and, you know, work at it, and it will get better. You know, I love that. And yeah, sounds like you had a rough summer pretty much, but I'm glad you stuck with it, and I'm glad that you pulled something out of it. You know, again, you know, you work at it, and just the knowledge that the cards aren't stacked against you, cold streaks will end, and I really appreciate you sharing that. So that's neat that you grew as a player during that time, and it sounded like you had some good friends that invited you and you know, encouraged you and buoyed you up and kept you going. Along that note, who are some of your, I guess, Magic mentors? Are there any pro players, past or present, that you look up to that you've learned from either in person or from afar?
So Magic mentors, let's see. So really part of the issue I had in high school was that my game store, my like LGS was not really that competitive. So I was definitely the best one there. So that at like 17, so that really kind of presented an issue. But like, there's a bunch of people in the Boston area that are fairly good. So that's by going into PTQs and PPTQs, I was definitely able to grow and improve as a player that way. But once I got to Amherst, Noah Walker actually lives here, though he does not go to school here. So I've been able to play with him and learn from him a lot, even though every time I play him, I get trounced. I think I'm like 0-4 in like comp Ariel events. It's pretty bad. And then this player is like Ben Feingersch, another Boston area players that I have been able to work with and learn from a lot.
That's awesome. That is really cool. That's neat that you have, again, people that you look up to, people that you've been able to play with and learn from. And, you know, oftentimes we learn more in the losses than in the wins. So obviously I know you want to win, and someday, you know, you will defeat Noah Walker. But for the meantime, you know, learn. It sounds like you do a great job of evaluating, you know, your situation and getting great takeaways from your game. So I commend you for that for sure. On our Magic journey, we all have highs and we all have lows. And so I would like you to dive in to your worst Magic moment and share with us again what you learned from that experience. So take us there.
Okay, I think I actually already went over it.
Okay, so it was that summer?
It was that summer, specifically that PPTQ at the beginning.
Yeah.
Where I got that game loss because I shuffled in the learn from the past and then ended up throwing away the match. That was definitely my like lowest point. But the takeaway is that you should be more careful and should slow down. Because it's worth noting that learn from the past, it wasn't that got me the game loss. It was the third time something I got in a game rule violation or whichever warning that is. It was a more systemic issue. I used to get a lot of warnings for game rule violations and such. Not intentional, I was just sloppy. So you need to kind of clean up and make sure you don't get that type of warning. Or like deck reg errors are very easy to get. I used to get them. I used to be like pretty afraid of deck checks because I would easily have an error and then get a game loss, and it'd be very, I don't want to say tilting, but like something similar to that. But now I never get them. Part of it is that you just count up your cards, make sure you have 60. Like that will prevent 90% of your errors.
So on the flip side are our highs and our proud magic moments. So what has been your proudest magic moment, Zach?
I'd probably be lying if I said anything other than this past Grand Prix Providence, because definitely like being able to draw the last two rounds because I went undefeated in the previous 13. Like that's definitely something that felt pretty good. But
and what place did you finish ultimately?
At fifth. I lost in the quarterfinals to Yinchen Wang, who then won the tournament. So like did not feel as bad after he won.
Absolutely. So what did that feel like for you to make it to the top eight and finish fifth at a Grand Prix?
So the thing is, by making it to the top eight, I got to the Pro Tour, which was the number one goal. So like all you can win from there is like pro points and money, which like it's pretty great. Like even a difference of like 3 pro points can easily catapult you into like silver or something similar to that. But and obviously like $10,000, who doesn't want $10,000 versus I think it's like $1,500 for top eight. But like once I beat Dave Shields in round 11 and I was like 11-0, I like won the next one, and at 12-0 I knew that I was essentially locked for the top eight, and that's when it kind of like I was kind of free, like because I had made the top eight and made the Pro Tour, like the pressure is kind of off. Like I won the next round too, but like that was just to lock up the first seed. I even thought I was going to have to play like round 15, and then I realized I could just like draw. So it was kind of like I was kind of off, which is probably a bad thing when it comes to like competing, but just like whatever else I did was kind of icing on the cake.
Yeah, for you at that moment, like your goal was to make it to the Pro Tour, and you finally achieved it. And so it didn't matter what place you got in the top eight. That wasn't necessarily your goal this time around. Your goal was to make it to the Pro Tour, and you made it at that point. So that's awesome. Absolutely awesome. So Dublin's going to be your first one?
Yes, I'm very excited.
Oh, man. Nice. Very nice. So, oh, man, yeah, a couple of things, I guess, before we dive into, I guess, your preparation and whatnot. As you have played Magic, obviously, to get where you are, you have played thousands of games against hundreds of people, and you've seen a lot. What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
Oh, man. Oh, that I see players make. That's, like, hard. So I would say, let's say not talking about game mistakes, like specifically, in general, people don't break down why they lost. For example, against Yinchen Wang, game two, he actually got a, for one thing, he got a game loss for deck reg error. I was coming in with a game, like up a game, just like a free game in the quarterfinals of a Grand Prix. At one point, towards the end of the game, he goes, Tireless Tracker, tapped land, cracks a clue, draws a card, casts Traverse, and gets an Emrakul, which then he then, with no cards in hand, and then he casts it exactly next turn and uses it to win the game. So what some players will do is they'll be like, well, like obviously he was so lucky to top that Traverse, and like win the game with it. Like my opponent was really lucky, which is true to some extent. But at the same time, I spent the time afterwards thinking about how I could have played slightly more aggressively and not given him that turn. So like you need to think about what you could have done differently. I try and think of it as if there's always something I could have done. Like it was always in my control, which to some extent it isn't. But if you do think of it that way, it makes it much easier to like think through your mistakes. Not only that, you should also discuss whether you win or lose the plays of the game with your opponent and try and break it down. Even if they don't like, sometimes they won't respond. In that case, you should probably not. That's just a politeness thing. But just trying to like break it down, even just for yourself, to figure out what you did that was either really good and that you should do again, even though you thought it was like just mediocre at the time, or what you did that if you'd done it differently, maybe game two, if you sequenced differently, you could have just crushed them and not even gone to game three. So like trying to figure out what you could have done differently is something that people don't do. And instead they go, oh, my opponent top decked, blah, 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 and I lost. Like, that's not really the story of the game, even though that's what players make it to be.
That's really good. I like that. Like, taking 100% ownership, saying, what could I have done differently? Even if your opponent got lucky, back it up to, you know, like you were saying, how could I have been more aggressive to deny him that extra draw step? You know, so I really, you know, like that insight in, you know, how to play and how we should shift our thinking to be more responsible for our actions. So turning the lens inward, you know, so first we have the biggest mistake that you see others make, but we want to turn it in on you. What's the deepest thing that you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
Ooh, learned about myself? I've learned that I really like to focus and compete. Like, that's not something I didn't really like play sports in high school or like do any other like really competitive activities. Magic's my like competitive outlet. That's something I've been able to really push and push more so than I thought I would want to or thought I was up to, if that makes sense.
Yep. You like to focus and you like to compete. And then what are you working on as a player? What are some of your shortcomings that you're trying to buoy up?
I think right now I'm still working on the mulliganing and the sideboarding, although that's definitely like I think mulliganing, because part of the issue is that mulliganing is just like the single most important decision you'll make in the game. Just every game, like outright, like any one decision, mulliganing is more important. So that like by improving your mulliganing, you necessarily improve your win percentage. Also, I really need to improve both modern and draft. Those are two formats. Like, I do well in standard and sealed, but then draft, like, that's definitely something I need to work on. And before the Pro Tour, I'll probably do many, many drafts and lose many, many tickets on Magic Online.
Yeah, so actually on that note, I would love to dive into that. So first of all, let's go into the Grand Prix. I want to know, what did the preparation look like for you? How far out in advance were you practicing? When did you decide what to play? Like, walk us through what preparing for the Grand Prix looked like for you so that you were able to show up and make it to the top eight.
So before the Pro Tour, I knew that I was most likely going to play whatever deck went 9-1.
Okay.
And then that decision was made even easier when four blue-white flash decks went 9-1.
Now, why did you decide that? Just because it's, clearly it's going to be a good deck?
Yes. And that it'll be, I think Providence was like the week after the Pro Tour. So it was like clearly the best deck. Like, it was what was clearly the best deck. And hence, that's why a lot of people brought green-black delirium, because it was supposed to beat blue-white flash. So starting from there, I looked at the four lists. The four lists are kind of divided into two of them have like Gisela's and no Gideon's main or something weird like that. And then the other two are Joey Manor and someone else's list, which are much closer to the current lists. I like those a lot better. I love Gideon. So it was not hard to convince me to play that list. Okay. So I took that and then I needed to tune it. So that involved, for example, I think taking out like the Declaration in Stones or whatever, making sure I had four Stasis Snare, making sure the main deck had four Stasis Snare, had 25 lands, and two of them were Westfall Abbeys. Those were the main like things I wanted to change from the Pro Tour list.
Okay. And why? How did you make those decisions?
Okay. So I liked 25 lands. Yeah. So I liked 25 lands from having played like green, white tokens in Band Company. I knew that hitting your land drops is like very important, like really low. 25 felt better. At the same time, you're going to flood out somewhat. And having Westfall Abbey as a mana sink is important. In fact, Westfall Abbey outperformed at the Grand Prix easily. Because I never thought I would be flipping it, for one thing. And I flipped it a bunch. So, and then tuning-wise, there's three slots, essentially, in the main deck that are flexible. I had two Rattle Chains in the gate. What was probably correct would be something like two Thalias in the gate at that. If I were to like replay the tournament, The Rattle Chains, I just boarded them out every matchup, except like, I think against like one control deck. The A8 was like pretty good. And then the sideboard, I tuned. I don't remember what the previous sideboard was like, but I added, I know a second Jace, Unraveler of Secrets. That card is very good and definitely performed over the course of the weekend. And then it was just about like tuning it to what I thought would be there. I would definitely cut the Ceremonious Rejections if I had, again, replayed the tournament. Because those were just, I never boarded them in, I think. My friend played the exact same 75 to the top 16. And he said the same thing, just never board them in.
Man, I love seeing, I love to see that progression. I love to see where you started and how you were able to tweak it and move forward. And so how many reps did you get in before the Grand Prix with that?
I didn't get in that many reps. I just like played with my friends a bit. I think we played essentially like Wednesday and like Friday nights, like a couple hours, not much. We didn't even play like FNM or anything.
So were you worried that, like you said, people brought green black because it was supposed to, you know, beat the blue white deck? So if a deck does so well, it goes 9-1 at a pro tour, people are going to be gunning for it. So were you worried about that, or how did you address that?
No, in fact, I would say not the opposite, but like to some extent, it was hidden information. You had to look at the 9-1 lists, and that a lot of players don't do that. A lot of players just decide not to play the deck or play whatever they're comfortable with. So therefore, definitely week one after just playing the strongest deck is something I strongly advocate and is definitely like the correct decision in my opinion. Clearly, I'm somewhat biased, but...
All right, yeah.
So that's actually always something I would advocate is just playing the best deck rather than playing the deck that's like good against the best deck. For example, we've seen blue-white has been tuned and now is much better against green-black with the addition of spell shovels and such in the sideboard. We can see it winning Grand Prix and Classics and all sorts of things.
Very true. So now, moving forward, you touched on this just a little bit ago. What are you going to do to prepare for your first Pro Tour? Because we've heard this from other guests that they just qualified for the first Pro Tour. And so now you're in a situation where you haven't been before. So do you have a group that you can, you know, play with that's been on the Pro Tour? So like, what's that going to look like for you? And what's your plan to really dive into the Pro Tour?
So I know players who've either been on the Pro Tour or will be on the Pro Tour. For example, Noah's actually qualified for this Pro Tour. So I'm hoping to like kind of tag along with someone who qualifies. The issue is that the RPTQs haven't happened.
Okay.
And when those do, I'll know who else that I in my like network kind of has qualified, and therefore I can like figure out who's qualified and who I can test with. I will be going to Prague.
Oh, cool.
GP Prague. Very cool. The weekend before, and then. So I'll go to GP Prague and then probably go to Dublin and test. And that will be my testing, hopefully.
Love it. Best of luck. That's cool getting some travel in off of it. That's awesome.
Yes, that's probably the best part is that Dublin is somewhere I've never been. So
yeah, so cool, so cool. Now, you've mentioned that Constructed is your best format. Is that right?
Yeah, Standard specifically.
Standard. I love Standard, too. I haven't been able to play as much this standard as I want, but I love Standard as well. So what would you say right now is an underplayed or a card that doesn't get as much respect in Standard? It doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not asking you to be like the Prophet and like figure out the next best thing and whatever. I just want, you know, just your kind of gut reaction. What do you think is an underplayed card or one that doesn't get a lot of respect?
Specifically in blue-white, Westvale Abbey. People have been cutting it. I saw, for example, Jack Kiefer's list from this past SCG Classic. He cut it and just like, do not agree at all. I think you definitely want to. It helps a lot more than people give it credit for. It's just a really powerful card and it really helps mitigate flooding to a degree that like no other spell land in Standard can really. No other man land, which blue white does not have, or anything can really.
Yeah, back when, oh my gosh, the white one that made the tokens at instant speed.
Oh, Secure the Waste?
Thank you. Good grief. Yes, back when Secure the Waste was in Standard, I definitely loved using Westboro Abbey for that. But I admit I haven't played much, you know, since then, you know. So that's neat to hear that you're getting a lot of good use out of it.
Yeah, even just like making 1/1 tokens, like you end up with 5 creatures a lot more than you think. Even like threatening it, because if you have Gideon that just like pumps out 2 guys, you make a token, you have a Reflector Mage, and then like a 3-bit Inspector, and that's 5 creatures. That's Westboro Abbey. Boom.
Interesting. Yeah, boom. Love it. Absolutely love it. Hey, so when you're traveling, when you're going to all these different places, and especially when you travel overseas, what do you take with you? What's inside your tournament bag?
So I try and keep it kind of minimalist, if that makes sense. So if I'm going into a tournament, typically I'll bring my deck box, usually a pad of paper and a pencil, although I've gone in without and just like found paper every round and then refound my pencil when I lose it. I don't use a playmat usually. I would bring water. I personally don't eat food during tournaments. I find that if I eat food, I'll, after like one round, fall asleep. And it's not even actually fall asleep, but like you just can't focus as much. Which of course then makes me feel uncomfortable, but like at least I'm winning, so.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So your deck box, paper, pencil, and some water for sure. So you definitely stay hydrated. That's great.
Yeah, I have friends who even sometimes will just not bring a bag. They'll just bring like their deck box and just carry that around. Like, I would just bring as little as you can, kind of. Like, most tournaments I end up without dice. Like, usually my opponents have them or the guys next to me, so that works out. But it's kind of like minimalist. The issue is that if everyone did that, then I'd have no
there'd be no dice. Yeah, I guess that's true. So, do you have any Magic-related resources that you can share with us?
Where I read my articles are just like channelfireball.com, starcitygames.com. I have a bunch of premium cards. So, like, I read the premium side, which has, like, significantly better articles. For example, like, Michael Major's articles are always good. Yeah, and actually, if you're, like, limited to the amount of, like, premium you have, I would suggest kind of creating a, like, joint account with your friends. Just, like, using all your premium cards on one account and then all reading from that account.
Yeah, just pool the knowledge. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's really cool. Absolutely cool. And do you have any activities that you feel help you get better at Magic?
Playing Magic. But that's, I would say specifically, don't underestimate the playtesting power of like FNM or somewhere where you're forced to actually play a match for actual like incentive. Because in playtesting, you can often like end up playing only game once. And like that's not representative of a matchup necessarily. So like, actually, like having thorough playtesting, often it's easier to just do this by going to like a local FNM or something similar.
Yep. So true, man. Absolutely love it. So, Prodigies out there, again, if you want to connect with Zach, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at ZKeeney, KIIHNE. So, look him up there, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, and reach out to him on Twitter. Zach, we love cheering on past guests and seeing them go off and do great things. So thanks for sharing where you're going to be. We know that you're going to be the Pro Tour and a couple Grand Prix other than that. So we are going to watch you and cheer you on and definitely look forward to hearing many more great things from you.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully, that's a lot of pressure, but we'll see.
Just get out there and have fun for sure. So Zach, what is one last parting piece of guidance? Either something that you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Definitely like look back on each game and each match and see what you could have done differently. That's something you can fairly quickly improve your game. And just like seeing where you made mistakes, even if you like write little notes to yourself on your life pad and like ask the opponent about them after or whatever, just like figure out what you're doing wrong. And you can even, I've seen players, they'll stand behind their friend and they'll take notes whenever they think that their friend like made some mistake. So maybe that might, that's taking it like even farther, but just like figuring out where you made mistakes, you don't make them again, and you can keep getting better.
Well, Zach, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Zachary, it was awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much. As always, Prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Zachary Kihne. That's K-I-I-H-N-E. Check him out there. You can also connect with him on Twitter. If you want to carry on this conversation and keep talking about magic, come join the Facebook group if you're not already there. mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group is where you can go for that. We have several past guests that are there in the group, as well as hundreds of amazing prodigies who love to share deck ideas, love to share tips and tricks, love to share other articles that they're finding, love to share their own projects. We have a great community member, Sam, who is doing a draft a day and posting his videos here in November. He's also the primary organizer of the Prodigy Sealed League that we've been doing for the past two sets, and I look forward to doing for every set here on out. So just join the Facebook group, have a fantastic discussion with uplifting, positive, good-natured Magic players so we can all get better together. I look forward to joining you again in the next episode, and make sure you keep your eyes out for Grand Prix Madrid and Grand Prix Denver this weekend so you can keep your finger on the pulse of all the latest and greatest Magic developments. Thank you again to Zachary for joining us today, and thank you to the Prodigies for supporting the show directly. That really, really means a lot to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to you for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to put me in your earballs and learn about magic together. I love it. I look forward to doing it more and more. And until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.